Welcome. I'm Celine Diaris. I'm the host of Regenerative Voices, Elevating Stories, Activating Change, created by At the Epicenter. And with me today is Jeremiah Meckelwee. He is the Chief Merchandising Officer for Thrive Market. And I'm so grateful to have you join us today for a conversation about all sorts of interesting topics. We are having this conversation as all of us are living in our stay-at-home orders for COVID-19. And of course, Thrive Market, being an online grocery, is seeing extraordinary demand for all the necessaries that we are finding sometimes not available when we want them. So, Jeremiah, thank you so much for bringing yourself to this conversation. And I'd love for you to just start off with maybe a little bit about what you all are experiencing in this unexpected change of reality.
Yeah, thank you so much, Celine. It's great to be here. And obviously, just sending out well wishes to everybody tuning in, and hopefully everyone's safe and well, and definitely unprecedented crazy times here. And on the Thrive side, it's been, a really interesting time. We obviously have seen a dramatic increase in people ordering groceries online and ordering food online. I think previous statistics had that percentage around 4% of American households ordering food online. And I guess the most recent data I've heard is as much as 40% of Americans.
Oh my gosh.
Online food orders in the last few months. And it may have been that. So it's been quite dramatic. And, frankly, we feel like we've leaped forward a couple of years here in terms of demand. And we've just been trying to keep up with it. Fortunately, we have incredible, heart-driven teams, not just at our headquarters, but all of our fulfillment centers. And again, knock on wood, everyone's been healthy. We've been taking precautionary measures since the end of February, actually, to keep our fulfillment center employees healthy and safe and give them peace of mind. Obviously, we've been working with local health departments in Reno, Nevada, and in Batesville, Indiana, where our fulfillment centers are located. Taking every precaution we can just to keep our team safe first and foremost, and then keep the products going out our doors to people's homes as clean and safe as possible too. And so beyond that, we've just been scrambling and, all hands on deck to try to keep up with this unprecedented demand and try to get people food and get people their essentials as quickly as we humanly can. And, I think from our side, we're really grateful to be in the position we are to bring healthy products to all Americans. We're also, very stressed and a little, it's never good enough, right? We want to get products to people faster. And so that's been frustrating is just how fast it all happened. And, despite our best efforts to be prepared, you can never be prepared for something like this. So
no, that is such an important thing, I think, for all of us to remember when people get frustrated with availability of things, filing for the PPP money, all of these things. I keep reminding my colleagues, like, nobody was ready or had any idea that this was on the horizon to the degree that it is now affecting us. And so having the systems in place, it's humbling to bear witness to how much we're not ready for something this epic to contend with. And so having compassion for all of the different pieces and parts that have to be put into a whole nother level of ask is important for all of us to maintain patience and kindness. And it helps us all weather this too, to have that as a platform for shared recognition.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been quite amazing just to see, kind of everyone pulling together and, appreciations, such deep appreciations to everyone on the front lines out there too. I mean, it's their workers and grocery store workers. And even though we deliver a lot of food to homes, I mean, there's still fresh produce and, perishable products that people need to go out and get, and myself included. And so it's been incredible to see just the outpouring of people stepping up, and showing up for work and being out there to support, what what people need in this time.
For sure. You know, and I think it's interesting from the standpoint of what this is raising up into our collective attention. You know, the food system being something you and I have been involved with for a very long time, and the recognition that there are many aspects of our food system that are, let's just say, not optimal. And then there are emergent trends happening in food that are very exciting and offer a lot of value beyond just the quality of the food that we receive, but what it does to ecosystem restoration, water cycle restoration, so many different benefits. So that might be a nice segue for us to talk a little bit about how Thrive Market is really working on sort of an agricultural revolution as well inside of its private label products.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey. I mean, we launched Thrive Market about 5.5 years ago with this mission of bringing healthier products to all Americans, realizing that there were, you know, both geographical and economic limitations to the accessibility of healthy products and healthy food. And so when we started out on this mission, you know, we realized that e-commerce and delivering to people's doors unlocked a lot of those barriers, and then creating this 21st century food cooperative model where members can join, you pay an annual membership fee that can both help lower the price of food that's being delivered, but then also we gift a free membership to every paid member that joins to a lower income family, first responder, teacher, military veteran. So this idea that you can all come together to create an environment where food can be delivered, healthier products can be delivered to everyone who needs them. And, you know, the interesting part about that fundamental mission is that, you know, at face value, you could announce that mission and that's very noble, and you can, and then you just find products and you sell them, right? Well, in our ecosystem, we believe that we had a deeper responsibility beyond that, not just to our members that sign up, but to all the food supply chains and all the product supply chains that actually produce the products, whether they're in our Thrive Market brand, which we now have close to 700 of those products, or the third party brands that we offer, which we have, you know, 6,000 of. So, so for us, it was, how do we get beyond just selling products to our members, and how do we get deep into working with farmers, working with producers, working with growers, and working with processors to ensure that they're paid fairly, to ensure that they're using the best agricultural practices. And then, you know, as a retailer and as a hub, how do we connect resources with producers, with farmers, so that they can incrementally improve the impact that they're having? And that led us down the path, you know, starting with organic 5.5 years ago and moving into biodynamic, which is, you know, many people believe the first form of regenerative agriculture that existed, thanks to Rudolph.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so we leaned into that heavily early on and worked on educating our members around that and the viability of what that meant. And then this regenerative agricultural movement kept blossoming. And the more conversations we had, especially with growers and farmers, and for me personally, this year has been really interesting. I mean, it's been turbulent for everyone, but I actually started this year very early January down in Colombia, south of Bogota, working with regenerative farmers and producing products for Thrive Market. And, you know, just what I've identified from working with farmers all across the world and working with supply chains that actually feed into both our branded and third party brands is like everyone is in the same boat right now. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of anxiety about climate change and about the world we're living in and food security. And the themes are the same, whether you're talking to a farmer in the Midwest of America, or whether you're talking to a farmer in Peru or Colombia or Africa, the concerns are, how am I going to make a living? How are we going to make sure we have a market and an economy and people to produce food for? And what's interesting is, like, the themes around the globe are the same, and they all cycle back to regenerative agriculture, taking care of the earth where you grow food, nourishing the soil as part of your production, quote unquote. And as you said, reclaiming water, reusing water, minimizing resource use, minimizing inputs, and working with the earth to not just create a sustainable farm, which also, by the way, is a noble goal. And we work with plenty of farmers that are moving towards sustainability as a first step, but moving past that into actually healing the earth and creating an environment that we can thrive in for generations to come, and not, you know, reach that threshold of despair, or, you know, going downward from there. So it's been, you know, dovetailing that with our broader mission and educating Americans and our members specifically about why that's so important and how crucial your dollar is and how crucial your vote is in that equation has been a really amazing gift, and also something that we take, you know, as a deep responsibility for our members and frankly for the earth. So it's we feel like we're in the right spot at the right time, and a great conduit as a retailer, because we have so much coming at us that we can help shift and shape. And the other interesting thing I would say, now that I'm talking about the subject, was just how much people often ask me, because we've helped convert a lot of supply chains to regenerative recently, and we've been working with farmers to move beyond organic. And I get a lot of questions from people saying, like, wow, you must have got a lot of resistance, or, you know, people must not want to do that, or did you force them to do this? And what's been fun for me has been, like, the short answer is no. Like, everyone that we've talked to really understands the situation. I mean, farmers specifically understand the situation we're in and are really open to dialogue. And we've been fortunate to be able to connect resources and educational resources behind the scenes to actually help farmers make some of those incremental decisions and improvements. And the mantra we hear over and over is, like, just tell me there's market. Tell me that you can support us when we take 2 years to grow a regenerative quinoa crop. Are you going to be on the other side waiting for me with market? And beyond that, it's like, yeah, let me do it. Let's do it, which is super exciting.
I love what you were just sharing. And I'm struck by a couple of things that kind of weave into some of the thoughts my team and I have been discussing around what this COVID-19, kind of global experience provides. When you talk about, there are these consistent themes that you're encountering with farmers that are like, you know, how do I make a living? Are there going to be markets? If I make this effort and investment, will you be there on the other side? Which is kind of an obvious universal need of producers all over the world to A, have a more diversified income, which regenerative agriculture often offers, because you have companion planting as part of that strategy. You have cover cropping as part of that strategy. Some of those things might have another use that was a new output for a farmer that they didn't have before. And then when I think about this situation with COVID-19, you know, we are in a shared reality, unlike anything we human beings in our lifetime can point to. And I think it creates kind of an equalization suddenly of, we are really one planet, one community. We all have really many of the same basic needs, the same basic loves and fears. And so it's fascinating that there is also that kind of interwoven connectivity that you're witnessing in the farming communities around the world, that they too have similar shared values and needs, and that we have an opportunity to create a whole new way of relating to farmers that I think could be revolutionary for how they're treated, how they're paid, the kinds of contracts that they find themselves in that are more secure and long-lasting, to make sure that this is a highly equitable future in our food system.
Totally, absolutely. And I think the amazing part, and, you know, as you alluded to at the top, you and I have both been in this for a really long time, and, you know, working with Thrive, I work with kind of the next generation in many accounts. I mean, I work with people under 30, and you know, it's been fun for me as a, you know, 26 years into this natural and organic journey and now regenerative journey that I've been on. When we launched Thrive and when we started telling these stories, trying to bring more transparency to the table, because I think that's the key of what you were just talking about, is like, what's been amazing is living in the digital age. You know, I think back to working in an independent health food store 26 years ago and using books, and there was no internet, and we had to look things up and share with our customers and help them navigate, you know, all the information that they were reading in the newspaper or finding in other sources or in the encyclopedia. Remember those? And now we're at this place where, you know, you can walk down the aisles and you have in your fingertips one of these, and you can look up any health element, any ingredient, and you can find immediately what it does or doesn't do, or whether it's good for you or not, or, you know, you can find your own trusted resources to make some of those judgments. And I think the next level of that, to your point, is farmers and where does food come from, and really understanding where food comes from. And I think the interesting part, you know, the other interesting part has been, you know, with these stories of radical transparency, I often find myself going like, well, our industry was here all along. We were just waiting for this time because we don't have the dark secrets. We don't have, you know, the kind of seedy underbelly. We were just here trying to do the right thing and trying to, you know, minimize toxic elements in the food supply system and, you know, go organic as a first step. And now taking that to the next level. And a lot of the farmers, especially the folks who have been in organic farming for 30, 40 years, and already have, you know, the other funny part about the regenerative conversation is so many of the true organic farmers were already implementing so many elements of regenerative into what they do anyway, with crop rotations and with composting and with reclaiming their water and creating, you know, alternative power supply systems so they can work off the grid as needed, and, you know, rotational grazing with animals. And I mean, so many of the elements, smart organic farmers who work with the earth and work with their land, were already doing a lot of that. So it's really more a matter of them, you know, us finding them and them saying, yeah, we've been here all along. Like, this is what we're doing. Can you help us? Can you help us tell those stories? Can you help us bring this consciousness to the consumer so they understand the difference between what we're doing, which is, you know, the correct way that honors the earth and honors all the species of the earth, versus the incorrect way, which is, you know, fast, speedy, increase outputs as much as you humanly can, and then the earth is left scorched and burned, and there's nothing left. And so it's, that part has been really, you know, fun, I would say, because like I said, we've been here all along. We just were waiting for the consciousness and waiting for it to catch up. And the information age has really empowered that, because now you can find the truth. And, you know, of course, there's more misinformation than ever out there. But like I was saying before, you have, if you have trusted resources and folks like at the Epicenter, for example, bringing knowledge and awareness in an unbiased, truthful manner, then it's out there waiting for you. And we live in an unprecedented time in that sense too.
I appreciate the shout out for at the Epicenter, because we definitely see ourselves as kind of an intermediary around all of these topics, and want to be sure that we are being unbiased and that we're bringing really good information forward. I think it's interesting that we are at, I feel, like a very potent sort of crossroads in the human story. And there's so much that we have been told and witnessing, both in our own communities, with unusual patterns in weather that are different from what we grew up with. And we hear stories from other parts of the world with epic storms and all sorts of things that are also unusual. And while we're inside of this current pandemic, it can be easy to just sort of become so tunnel focused on this current worry that we forget that we're still well inside of a fast moving train headed towards a not very pretty destination if we don't sort of reimagine what we can co-create together. And it's interesting, as you were saying, you know, there's a lot of farmers that have been doing organic production, have been biodynamic, have been stewards of the land and the place where they are. What is your witnessing or experience around, you know, the production systems that have been more inside of that more extractive model? What are you seeing in terms of any receptivity to, you know, reimagining their production opportunities, not only what they're growing, but how they're growing it? Is that something that's crossed your path?
In terms of more conventional agriculture?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I think the other interesting thing is, you know, for the better part of the 90s and early 2000s, you know, the natural and organic industry saw just record growth, and it was this hockey stick on the way up. And so some interesting things happened during that time period all the way up till recently, where, you know, the major CPG companies and even some of the big agricultural farms have been watching organic and wanting a piece of the growth. And, you know, I have a saying in life, it's like, however you get to doing the right thing is fine with me. I'm not one of those people that wants to chastise people for how they got to doing the right thing. I'm more interested in people doing the right thing. So
right on. Right.
So an interesting part of that has been like a lot of those larger CPGs and, you know, folks who are in big ag stumbled into organic and stumbled into it as a growth means or you know, acquired an organic brand to capitalize on the growth in the industry. And, you know, so a lot of those conversations, to your point, revolve around, hey, like, yeah, we actually do grow organic. It's a small percentage of our business, but if we have more market, we're happy to shift resources over to that. Or, so I've been engaged in a lot of that. I mean, it's, you know, it's been interesting because, as much as what I said a moment ago, I'm more interested in the outcomes, you know, along the way, you do need to ask the hard questions. And, you know, sometimes I'm in the room with some of those larger CPG players and, you know, I'm not afraid to ask those questions. And, you know, they don't always have great answers, but I mean, my thing is asking the question and bringing awareness to some of the problems. And, again, like we've had great reactions and responses in many cases around, hey, while we're not an organic business, we have access to organic agriculture and we're willing to support it. We just haven't had the demand commensurate with the resources, and that's starting to change. And that's been really exciting to see. And I think the shift over the last 20 years has been, you know, those conversations are there now, whereas in the past they were, you know, maybe a joke, like maybe it was like, oh yeah, organic, that's, you know, the hippie stuff over there. And now it's very much a dialogue where it's, you know, those folks are coming to the table and really trying to understand. And by the way, it's not just agriculture, right? It's ethical trade, it's fair trade, and supporting ethical working environments and labor standards. And I'm still constantly amazed. We have a number of people on our team that came from, you know, more mainstream retail and more mainstream buying roles. And as they come onto our team, I feel like it's a training exercise to teach them to ask the next question, you know, where are your products produced? What are the working conditions of the people who are producing them? Do you have ethical labor guidelines and standards and third party audits validating how humans are being treated that are in your supply chain? And, you know, just the looks on people's faces when you tell them like, hey, these are the questions we ask at Thrive with every single supplier we work with. You know, it's that shock of like, really, I'm supposed to ask that? And then you see that relaxation of like, oh yeah, this is good. Like, this is how I want to do this job. And you know, that, you know, for me, I'm like, yes, do the job that way. Like, that's what we want you to do. And we want to make sure no one suffers to bring great healthy products to Americans, because otherwise we're defeating the purpose of our existence if we're creating another problem by solving one problem. And you know, we're not perfect. I mean, no one is. And you know, you're with 6,000 products, we're constantly in dialogue all around the world, and we're learning new things every day. And new, and when you do that, you're finding new challenges, new opportunities on how to correct. But I think it's the receptivity from big CPG and even big ag to a certain degree, just even being in the room and being interested in the conversations to me is progress and makes me happy.
I agree with you. I see that at our summits that we have people coming from all different types of industry, And a lot of them are there just to kind of soak it up, hear what this is about, start to have a deeper context for what is this conversation and where is it leading and what is the value prop and why is it important for us to lean in? And I think, you know, when I think about the public and how we help educate our fellows around this interconnectedness between all these pieces, you know, that how a farmer is treated is going to affect how that farmer treats that landscape, because if they're being paid well enough to work at the level that we really want them to be working in terms of leaving some land undisturbed to stay as natural habitat and putting in multi-species so that both the pollinators have what they need to survive, the crops have the nutrients in the soil that are coming to it naturally through those legumes that are securing the nitrogen and the broccoli that's cleaning the soil. I mean, there's so many interesting things as you learn, as you go along, how many different pathways there are to weave into an agricultural model or system that are so, so different from most of what we are used to imagining as agriculture, or even what we see in our communities. Here in Colorado, I see these massive fields of that are rotating between GMO corn, GMO soy, GMO wheat, and that's it. There's no cropping over the winter. I mean, that is just exhausting, that landscape, and it is not doing anything to create a long, steady, forward momentum in those soils for a long, long time. So it's interesting, the financial burden that has faced particularly the American farmer, because so much of American cropland are in these more commodity products. I mean, it's kind of not a fact many people know is how little of our food is grown here in the United States. So much of it is brought in, especially when you get to organic, but when you think about how many acres are in food that mainly goes to feedstock or other products, and not a lot of that ends up on our dining room table. Could you say a little bit about what you see or are aware of about the, I don't know, the incongruencies in agriculture and how we perceive it and what the opportunity is to reimagine?
Yeah, I mean, I think you touched on a lot of it, right? But I mean, I do think this mindset of what we were talking about a moment ago of how much can we get out of this 1 acre or hectare, or how much can we produce and then we'll move on to somewhere else. And I think, you know, again, byproduct of it becoming a smaller world and us being all connected is we're seeing that ripple effect happen, to your point, that it creates a broad, dramatic change for the whole world, not just the little plot of land that you're on. And so that awareness, I think, is definitely changing the tune. I mean, to your point, there's still mass, big swaths where conventional agriculture is still taking place and GMOs are still happening. And, you know, so, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's a balancing act to find the right cadence. I will say, like, I've spent a ton of time with farmers the last couple of years and, you know, especially in Central and South America, the farms I've met with, I've actually had to tell them they were regenerative because, again, they weren't, you know, that was not something they were trying to be. They just work with the earth and they work in regions that are very biodiverse. And rather than slashing and burning, they're just planting in concert with what's happening in their environment currently. And they've found, to your point, that that creates a more nourished, more rich soil environment and more nourished environment for plants to thrive. I will say, you know, in some of those regions, the farmers I've talked to have changed. They've changed from planting coffee to planting cacao because the temperatures have risen at some of the lower altitudes and they needed something they could rely on more and the environment shifting. So you're seeing radical change pretty quickly. So I think, you know, that part for me really took it. You know, you hear, we're all exposed to this in the world where there's, you know, different political factions arguing about reality and what isn't real and what is. And then you go and meet with a farmer in Colombia or Peru or in Mexico, and they'll tell you what has happened since their grandfather farmed that land and how they've worked with the earth, yet still seen these changes in temperature rising or decreasing water or floods that have wiped out an area that their family has farmed for hundreds of years. And so you start seeing reality and not listening to the news and saying, okay, I'm here with an actual farmer telling me about their life and their land, not just in the last 10 years, over the last 150 years and the changes that have happened. And I think that disconnect for people, unless you, and I feel grateful to be able to experience that directly because it's very convincing. But unless other people on broad communities are able to embrace that lesson and really understand it, then they're not going to create that change in demand to actually start driving what they purchase. And I think that's, you know, a role, back to Thrive for a second, that's a role that we relish in terms of education and trying to work with our members to help them understand the impact that they're having. And, you know, to me, at the end of the day, it does become a market conversation, because I'm a big believer that market is more powerful than politics, more powerful than anything, since we live in a capitalist society. We live in a society where people want to purchase things for money. And so the best vote you have is the one you use every single day, and that's your dollar. And that's where you spend your resources and your time and, you know, shopping local, meeting your farmers, meeting your producers. We're in a world now where everybody can do that, which is profound. You know, even 5 years ago, that wasn't as accessible. Now you can ask those questions. And, you know, the last thing I'll say about that too is, you know, we take a lot of heat. I think whenever you put, I've learned this in my career in natural and organic, it's like whenever you put yourself out there as, hey, we believe in regenerative, we believe in organic, we believe in doing the right thing, you get a lot of darts thrown at you. You get a lot of people saying, well, here's all the reasons you're not doing all the things you say you're doing. You're not doing them well enough, or you're not. And my feedback is like, that's great. Please challenge us, because that's how we learn and get better. However, make sure you're doing that too, to, you know, the big CPG companies and the other big retailers, and make sure you're holding everyone to that same playing field. And then we'll all win, because the world will become a better place when we do that with everyone. If you're only getting frustrated with, you know, somebody who seems righteous and, you know, isn't necessarily trying to be right, just trying to do the right thing, then no one improves, because you're becoming an ostrich. You're putting your head in the sand. You're not really raising the bar in terms of how people are looking at all business, not just the do-gooders, like you all and us. So.
I love that you just said that. And I'm going to just take a quick break. And for those of you listening, you're listening to Regenerative Voices, Elevating Stories, Activating Change. I'm talking with Jeremiah McElwee, and I am your host, Celine Diaris. Jeremiah is with Thrive Market and is the Chief Merchandising Officer. You know, I love that you brought that point up, Jeremiah, about holding everyone to the same standard of care, because so often it is those who put themselves out there as really striving to do their best and utmost that are the first target, as opposed to sort of looking at holistically all the different players in the field and going, well, it's really great that group is making that effort. What about these others? Why are they maybe not doing the same level of effort, and how can we ask and push on them just a little bit to say, hey, is it a possibility that you too could up your game and think more about the long-term well-being of the producers in your supply network, and making sure that there is a attention to restoration of ecosystem health as opposed to continued degradation of ecosystem health, given that we're all deeply dependent on this planet's for our well-being. We won't exist without her being vibrant and healthy. And we know that this planet is in, she's sick. And it's something that we have a lot of accountability for as human beings, the mess we've been making. I don't know if you saw the meme out there in social media. Someone posted, Mother Earth has sent us to our rooms to think about what we've done.
Yeah.
during this current pandemic. So I hope that some folks who maybe don't think about these things are having some new thoughts in or their consideration around, you know, how everything is interwoven and what we do does have an effect. And I loved your using that vote with your dollars, because it's so, it cannot be understated. It is so important. If these things matter to you, then at least shift something in your life. Doesn't have to be everything. That's a big ask, but shift something, you know, buy an organic sheets instead of conventional sheets. Buy organic pasture-raised butter. Do something in your repertoire and keep adding as you go, and you become part of that larger family of solution, which is a very, that's a very satisfying thing to realize.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think, you know, my observation on that too is just that, you know, I have a couple mantras in life. One is like, the only constant is change. And, you know, I had a mentor early in my career who drilled that lesson into me, and it was largely focused around business, right? But I kind of feel like that's a mantra for life, right? Which is, you know, if you embrace the fact that everything is changing, it's less disruptive. And like, let's be real, humans, we hate change. Like we get into routines, we love doing the things we do. We become very attached. It's comforting. It makes us feel secure, especially, you know, with everything happening. Forget COVID aside for a moment, but even in everyday life, like we have losses, we have trials and tribulations, every single one of us. And, you know, sometimes you just want that comfort of your routine to get you through. And I think the challenge, you know, I always put out there to people is like, hey, you might learn some new information that disrupts your comfort level, and it's okay. Like, to your point, Celine, you don't have to go from, you know, living a mainstream conventional lifestyle to being a radical plant-based vegan who only eats organic and only shops at farmer's market overnight, right? You can take incremental steps. And because one of my other favorite sayings is not letting the perfect get in the way of the good. And You can continue to make incremental positive steps. And frankly too, like, even if you change nothing, I think a big part of modern times is like being open to information and learning from one another and being able to share and not being so rigid in your belief system that you don't hear the person sitting across from you or the person sharing their story. And it doesn't mean you have to, you know, agree with everything they're saying or make radical life changes tomorrow. But listen to where they're coming from, and maybe it affects you to the point where you make a subtle change, to your point, or maybe you're at least asking others the question, you know, moving the question forward, moving the conversation forward so that others can learn and we can get towards solutions. And, you know, not being entrenched in your own beliefs to say like, no, this is how it is. I know this is how it is. I'm not going to do anything to change. That's how we stay stuck. And to your point, we've been on this kind of downward spiral a little bit where the earth's sending us those warning signals and we've ignored them for a long time, just thinking like, well, no, it's probably not it. We're probably okay. But now we're getting clear direction and clear alerts that, you know, we need to change. And I think humans, we're so powerful. I mean, we can do anything, especially collectively, that we really want to. It's just, you know, getting through that opposition to change or that fear around what will my future be, to thinking as a collective, what can we create together? How do we change this and move this forward in the most positive of ways and working with the earth instead of, you know, what about me? I'm going to only take care of what's right in front of me, and I'm scared. And being scared is normal, but comfort comes with community and being together to help solve problems.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think, again, sort of leaning into how globally we've all been asked to change behavior in an extraordinary way. And to your point about the amazingness of human beings, we've done it. And that for me is like the biggest banner of hope for what's possible for us as a human family, to sort of use this as our platform of recognition of like, guess what? we are extraordinarily capable of responding when we need to. And we do have something we need to respond to. And we can do this together. We can co-create a future forward that takes care of us as individuals, our communities, our families, the land, the air, the water, all the creatures that, frankly, we all love and admire. So, I mean, there's like such an upside that is very motivating to me. And I think when others, you know, think about it from that perspective, it's motivating to them too. And I think sort of circling back to Thrive and what you all are doing in creating products that are bringing that whole web of custody forward and putting it out there for the public to go, oh, I can try a direct trade regenerative organic coffee. I can try a regenerative organic coconut oil. And I can learn about why this is differentiated from the other things that I can choose. And if I choose this, how I'm becoming part of this larger custody of change that I can feel good about. Stirring it into my morning cereal or drinking it as my morning coffee. I would love for you to share a little bit about, you know, what that journey has been like in bringing these new products to market. And I know we've talked a little already about some of those farmers that you've been talking to, but share a little more about how did this come to fruition and what inspired the team to take this level of effort to bring these to the community?
Yeah, it's a great question. One of my favorite ones too. I mean, I think as we were talking about earlier, you know, when you set out on a mission to serve those less fortunate, I mean, really creating community around healthier food, healthier choices, and then you start looking at historically, farmers and producers of agricultural goods have been some of the most poorest paid, least acknowledged people in the supply chain. And I mean, if you really, you know, how much time do we have on this podcast?
As much as we want.
You really start diving back into some of the psychological influences that happened back in the 50s and really helped create this consumer mindset of, you know, people buying goods from supermarkets and that disconnect that started to happen from awareness of, you know, pre-1950, pre that time period, you know, people had backyard gardens and people shared things and there weren't commercial shelf stable products available across the whole United States or across the world. So it was very much more similar to Europe or to other parts of the world where, you know, you had what you had in your community and things were seasonal. I remember as a child of the 70s, you know, the produce department, you could only get certain things certain times of the year, you know, and even bananas were, you know, they would come in for a time period and then they'd go out. And now we're in a world where you can buy anything, anytime. And that's really shifted and created a lot of these disconnects and awareness and removed the human piece of the equation. And ironically, you know, as we set out on our mission at Thrive, you start realizing the overlaps. And like I was saying earlier, foregoing one problem or helping to solve one problem and then creating a whole nother subset, to me, that's the definition of externalizing costs. And that's been the fundamental challenge that has led our food supply system and so many big CPG companies astray, was this idea of, okay, now we've got a commercial product. How do we remove all the costs as much as we possibly can to drive it down to the cheapest possible price scenario for us and then keep it at the same price for the consumer so that we make all of that money in the middle, right? And along the way, unfortunately, for better or worse, well, for worse.
Yeah, let's call it for what it is. It's been for worse.
It's, you know, when you look at externalizing costs, the humans in the equation and the earth have been the ones that bore the brunt of that. And so as we started looking at it, we just said, that's unacceptable. We have to figure out a better way to do this. Fortunately, again, in this food cooperative model where we bring people together with shared values and we bring in lower income families, teachers, military veterans, first responders, people who are often forgotten or marginalized, and we're all one and we're acting as one, we can then tell those stories and talk more about that. And then, you know, to your point about creating products, then it becomes, okay, what are all the ingredients in said product? how, you know, first of all, the other anomaly or thing that's happened in mass market CPG is that as part of that process we were talking about, that spiral to the bottom, you also start pumping things full of preservatives. You start looking at, how do I extend shelf life? How do I reduce waste or shrink, as they say in the CPG world? How do we make these products last forever and be as cheap as possible to make? And, you know, along the way, you make some really, you know, not aligned from a values perspective decision. And so we start looking at products and dismantling them, deconstructing them, and saying, what actually needs to be in this product? Why was there hydrogenated oil in that product? Or why was there this preservative in that product? What happens if we take it out? What's the shelf life? Oh, it goes from 3 years to 6 months. That's fine. We don't need to make 3 years worth of product. Let's make 6 months worth of product to sell to our members. And then when we sell out or when we get close, we'll make more. And we're not trying to ship this to 10,000 stores and have it sit on a shelf indefinitely. We want to make healthful, nourishing food. And so when you start breaking it all apart like that, and then you start going to the next place, which is, okay, where is this ingredient grown? Where is that one grown? You know, let's go out to that farm. Let's go out to the production facility and understand where they're sourcing these ingredients. And let's ask questions. And, you know, a big thing we've done that I think is different is, you know, and scary, by the way, is like, we don't come into it claiming to have all the answers. And, you know, I think that's a mistake a lot of people in business make, right? It's like, I know how this goes. I'm going to show you, here's what we do. And that's fine. You know, confidence is a great thing. But at the same time, if you're not asking questions and you're not trying to understand the person sitting across from you, or the person growing the food, or the person producing, or the person picking, or, you know, all the different stakeholders along the way, you're just ripe for forgetting people along the way, and you're ripe for underpaying people along the way, and you're ripe for quality issues and quality control concerns and, you know, all kinds of other problems when there's not that level of care. And to me, at the end of the day, you know, when you ask me this question, it comes back to care. And we get a lot of people who try our products, specifically our Thrive Market brand products, because those are the ones we have the most control over. And they are like, this is so good. This is the best coconut oil I've ever had, or this is the best quinoa I've ever had. And, you know, what are you guys doing to it? And, you know, and my thing is always, we're taking care of everyone along the way. And, you know, whatever your belief structure is, I truly believe that there's a lot more love and a lot more care going into each of those products, because people are being consulted, people are being talked to, no one's forgotten along the way, and they care more. I mean, they think, okay, this is an amazing product I'm making for Thrive Market that I'm going to ship across the world or even across the United States. And I actually care. I don't want anything to happen. I want this to be the best it can be. And, you know, we all know the power. We all know the power of that consciousness as humans. It's like, when you care about something, you're going to make it the best it possibly can be. And, you know, that's hard to quantify from a scientific perspective. And it's hard to do research on that to prove that point. But I've had that happen just anecdotally over and over. And that's what I point to is, you know, and fundamentally, obviously, there's some quality control along the way there, right? I mean, you know, and everything's being audited throughout the process and everybody's being taken care of, they're also following certain standard operating procedures and protocols and that lead up to just better products. And so for us, it's a non-negotiable to think about everybody in the supply chain and not, again, be creating problems or externalizing costs to somewhere else so that we can provide, you know, quote unquote, cheaper products or lower price point products to people. For us, it was, how do we make the best in class product, work through the supply chain and figure out all the externalized costs, and then use our model of collectivity to bring the price down. And by the way, one other note on that, I mean, when you go onto our site, I mentioned we have about 700 Thrive Market brand products and we have about 6,000 third party branded products. There's a reason why in Thrive Market brand, we don't play in certain categories. And, you know, we either can't find the right supply chain, or we can't find documentation throughout the supply chain to show that people are being treated fairly and ethically, or we can't find an organic supply or a non-GMO supply of a certain ingredient. So for us, we don't just make the product, right? I mean, we say, okay, you know what? We're not going to make that product. We're going to table that one, and we'll figure that out. And certain products, even in our brand, have taken us 2 to 3 years just to launch because we've had to sit there and do all the due diligence. And, you know, it never ceases to amaze me how many times when you're doing that process, you hear from producers or growers or even or manufacturers, like, no one's ever asked us that question. Why are you asking us that question? And, you know, for us, we're always trying to do that disclaimer of like, we're just asking so we know for our members and we're trying to make a better product. There's no, you know, we're not 60 Minutes. We don't have a hidden camera to catch you right now. We're just asking so we can learn and asking so we can feel confident and, you know, look our members in the eye and say, hey, we're doing the best we can. And can we do better? Yes. And we will. We'll continue to do better. But as of today, we're doing the best we can right now, right? So
that is awesome. Well, if I'm even more inspired to be taking advantage of my membership at Thrive and experiencing these products that you're talking about, given everything that you've shared. And I'm sure others who are listening will be feeling very much the same way. And I want to thank you so much for your candidness, the devotion that you bring to what you do at Thrive Market and the whole team at Thrive, for caring in the way that you all do and how holistic that caring is expressed in the whole web of custody, all the way to bringing the products to our doors, because we started off talking about how care is also being applied to the people in the warehouses that are doing the distribution. So I just want to give my silent applause to what you all are crafting and what standard you're setting up for all of us to look at. And I hope it gets emulated broadly as we move forward into healing our whole planet and making food be as nutritious for all constituents, from the starting point of the seed going into the ground or the animal grazing all the way to the dinner table. So
we can do it.
We can do it. I know that we can. So you've been listening to Regenerative Voices, Elevating Stories, Activating Change. My guest has been Jeremiah McElwee, who is the Chief Merchandising Officer with Thrive Market. I'm your host, Selene Diaris. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to having another conversation soon. Jeremiah, I would love to have you back.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Thank you.
The Regenerative Voices, Elevating Stories, Activating Change podcast series is produced by At the Epicenter, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. The podcast and video recordings are made possible by the generous support of people like you. Make a tax-deductible donation or sign up as a monthly supporter by visiting attheepicenter.com/donate. Support packages start at $1 per month. The podcast series is also sponsored by several corporate and organization sponsors. To become a podcast sponsor, visit attheepicenter.com/contact to let us know of your interest. If you found this podcast episode insightful and meaningful, please pass it on by sharing it with a friend or colleague who will also enjoy it. Thank you for tuning in, for your support, and for activating change.